question now of a united Europe seems farther away than ever. What if Europe were to unite? What about runaway inflation, the energy crisis, toppling governments, and the problems of a nearly bankrupt Italy? Are these going to mean anything of real significance to the United States of America? Here at the headquarters of the European Economic Community in Brussels, Belgium, I am visiting with leaders in industry, in finance, and government talking about the dreams of a united Europe. Well, will the United States of Europe ever become reality, or will this building become only a tourist museum like some of the other big, beautiful buildings of Europe where dreams of a united Europe have long since perished? So long as Europe was enjoying the good times in the midst of the post-World War II boom, where country after country was rising rapidly to new and unheard-of standards of living, the EEC seemed very much alive. And it seemed the possibility of one common currency, of common trade policies, taxation, reciprocity for university degrees such as doctors and dentists and the like, and eventually full political union still seemed to be quite a possibility. And yet when hard times came, beginning with the Yom Kippur War, all that seemed to fade into the past very, very quickly. Country after country here inside the European Economic Community proved perfectly capable of going it alone, with ultra-nationalistic and selfish purposes put before the common interests of the European common market. Witness the fact that after the Yom Kippur War, when the Arabs proved they would use their oil as a political weapon to get what they wanted in terms of changing policies from some European countries, and particularly Japan, vis-a-vis their relations with Israel, then, of course, it was proved that the Arabs would use oil as a political weapon. Well, in Europe, the consequences were enormous in comparison with what happened inside the United States. In the United States, we were earlier told it was only about 8%, and eventually they discovered it was about 11%, and then finally 17% dependency upon Arab oil. Here in Europe, however, it's up to 98% in country after country, where they have virtually no domestic supplies. And so the oil that has to fuel the energy of these countries, the production of electrical power, for example, the fuel for aircraft and autos and buses, the heating of homes and factories, in short, the very life's blood of some of the most powerful and viable economic powers the world has ever seen, must come from the Middle East. Very quickly, nations began to barter and began to haggle with the Arabs individually instead of acting as if with one voice. The energy crisis really was coming along anyway, but the Yom Kippur War, late in 1973, simply hastened everything that those who really knew what the handwriting on the wall was trying to tell us, merely hastened it and made it come along a lot more quickly. For example, comparing inflationary prices here in Belgium with those in the United States, it costs $1.40 for a gallon of gasoline. That's right, $1.40 right here in Belgium. Other countries, comparable. To an American, this would be absolutely unthinkable and probably cause riots in the streets. But that is the meaning of inflation inside some of these countries as a direct result of the Arab oil prices. In short, how it happened was that country after country simply had to start paying a great deal more, up to four times as much, for the natural raw materials and energy sources in order to fuel its economy. Those prices, of course, are going to affect everything right straight across the board, from coal and steel, all the basic staples of a modern industrialized society, right on down to the things that the housewives use. The European Economic Community has not been able to function then as one whole. Even though, when Willy Brandt was still at the helm of government in West Germany, and he told Mr. Nixon on his visit to the United States that from that time on, and that was early in 1973, that the United States should consider Europe as one entity in dealing with its foreign policy vis-a-vis one European country or another, and should not seek unilateral deals or bargains with one European country without considering them all. And yet, in the wake of the energy crisis, it was proved immediately that one European country could, in fact, go it alone without consulting its own partners. Inflation is absolutely out of sight in Europe today. It is runaway, causing deep financial chaos in many a country. And of course, this too shows the weakness of the European economic community. For example, in Italy, where inflation is out of all control, with more than 30 governments since World War II, when Rumor stepped down, there was no one really very quickly eager to step into his place to take up the reins of government in Italy. But the new government sought to solve some of the inflationary problems, and so it began to put curbs on foreign imports, and those from members of the European Economic Community. In other words, some of the trading partners inside the EEC were simply told their goods were not welcome inside Italy. It wasn't a matter of surcharges or taxes or quotas. It was a matter of total embargo, of simply saying, don't send us any more radios or transistors or any more telescopes or binoculars or leather goods or shoes or automobiles, because we simply will not accept them in Italy. We're now going to buy Italian. Now, of course, when it came to oil or coal or steel or raw reserves, then Italy's doors remained wide open from products from the United States as well as from parts of Europe. Well, in talking about the inflation and the fact that one nation after another has had deep economic sicknesses, which have, as a matter of fact, overlapped into the European economic community, we were discussing Great Britain and what had happened in Britain in the World War II recovery years for Europe. While Europe was booming away and one nation after another inside Europe was having to revalue its currency, Britain sought a short-term solution, which is really no solution at all, of devaluation of the British pound. His name is Monsieur Nassens, and he is an economic advisor to the Credit Bank, which is a very large bank with 700 to 800 branches here in Belgium and other countries inside Europe. Here were some of his comments about the devaluation of the British pound and the sickness of the economy of Britain, one major member of the European economic community.
Now, to keep up their standard of living, they always devalued. For if you don't devalue, you can't export anymore. And if you have no exportation anymore, you can't import anymore. So if you have no importation, your standard of living goes down. They are not accustomed to work hard, it seems. I don't want to offend the English people, but
that's true.
It's said that English people don't work as hard as other countries do. They strike a lot. They like the good life.
Do you believe that the British economy is going to recover from the current crisis?
Well, yes, it would mean adapting their work ethic and their standard of life and a lot of other things. Eh? Because by devaluing all the time, they kept up a certain level of exportation, but they always pay more and more for the importations. So it becomes very difficult for them to import anymore. So standard of living went down for a lot of years now. At long last, you can't pay for your importations anymore. Huh? People don't trust anymore your currency. Mm-hmm. But except after new devaluation, but then you still pay more for your importations. That's the big problem for most of these countries.
And so the problems inside the European economic community are rife. The question now is, will there ever be a United States of Europe at all? And if so, will it come out of a European economic community? Or will it come about in some totally different configuration as an answer to some other kind of a threat? The energy crisis is no game.
Solving it will take international cooperation and individual effort. You want to know why this crisis exists and what you can do about it personally. Request your free copy of What's Behind the Energy Crisis. Dial direct 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
The dream of a United States of Europe by the founding fathers of the whole idea was a twofold one, not the least of which was protection from the nuclear might of the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union emerged as a superpower after World War II, and of course we entered into the Cold War. And during that time, Europe recognized that only by banding together as one bloc in the sense of a defense posture, of course, under the Western Allies, could the Europeans safely rebuild their factories and their homes and enter upon a new kind of a standard of living than they had ever before known. And they managed to do so with a combination of Marshall Plan aid, U.S. dollars, automation of industry inside West Germany, American know-how and help, and gradually one country after another, notably, of course, West Germany, France, and Italy, all began to experience a fantastic post-World War II boom. Gradually, along came Euratom, the European coal and steel community, the original six, and now the nine of an expanded European economic community. But as I've said for so many years on the radio in the United States and on the television programs, both from here on the spot and also in our own studios in Pasadena, California, what we need to recognize in the United States is that a powerful United States of Europe would in fact be a very great competitor to the United States and in many ways a great danger. Oh, if we could guarantee from now into the foreseeable future that Europe would remain a very loyal and faithful and friendly ally to the United States, then why worry? And is anyone really all that uptight about Belgians or Dutch or West Germans enjoying the good life, buying new automobiles, taking vacations, living in finer homes, and having good jobs? No, of course not. But on the other hand, you need to realize we live in a world filled with tigers, that nations cannot always be predicted to act in very stable ways, that here in the very recent months inside Europe is a direct result of a world natural resources crisis, an energy crisis, a reserves crisis. One country after another has proved to be a little more ultra-nationalistic and selfish in their goals of achieving protectionist measures, separate sources of supply, better prices for themselves, no matter what it meant to their trading partners, and the rather slipshod framework of the EEC proved to come quickly apart. One country after another has been given American nuclear help. On a recent trip down into the Middle East, of course, President Nixon guaranteed the Egyptians and the Israelis alike nuclear reactors. Well, of course, for many years, most of the leading countries inside Europe, including Switzerland, not a member of the EEC, have had their own nuclear reactors. And Europe could become, if united, a very powerful nuclear power. A third power bloc to rival the United States in practically everything. We need to realize, even looking at the antagonisms of France toward the United States, at the deep-seated problems still under the surface in West Germany resulting directly from the outcome of World War II, that you cannot guarantee a powerful united Europe with nuclear weapons would not in fact turn into some sort of a Frankenstein which eventually could turn upon its own builders. There is no possible way to guarantee, in the shaky conditions among and between nations, that such a powerful grouping of nine nations now, which could shatter and fall apart along its present lines of a rather shaky economic agreement, and then emerge along some completely new configuration, purely military, and of a defense and a necessary posture, rather than a posture of economic convenience. And who is to say that cannot happen? I am beginning to believe more and more it will happen that way, and that very likely you're going to see a big depression hit in the United States, and you're going to see something very similar happening here in Europe, just as it did prior to World War II. We know a world recession is already here, and though some people are making many optimistic noises about the usual government attempts at price restrictions and wage controls, the short-term attempts at devaluation of currencies and the like, plus huge loans from other foreign countries to try to keep their flagging economies afloat, those who really tell the truth, those who are not afraid to tell you the truth because they are not leaders in banks or industry and they are not politicians, but perhaps scientists or economists who are assigned to a think tank or something of this nature are willing to tell you that world recession is already here and that it looks like big depressions could strike. And the signs are there for an impending big depression that could strike Europe. If it does, and if millions upon millions of Europeans inside the EEC and other nations in Europe as well lose the now very fine standard of living they have achieved since World War II, there is no telling exactly what will happen in terms of where some of the monies that go to present political parties from big industrialists and other concerns might find their way. Because let me tell you that when millions upon millions of Germans and other people inside Europe take to the streets and riot, when food strikes and virtual domestic warfare begins to occur inside big European cities and governments scramble to get a handle on the problem, you're going to see the type of governments beginning to emerge that will just about lift the hair of the average American and Briton to contemplate it. I was told off the record yesterday by a man who I will prefer not to name, that was high in financial circles here in the common market, that the very reason the Central European banks loaned about $10.5 billion to Italy to aid its flagging economy was precisely because they really worried about what kind of a government would emerge if the Italian government simply went bankrupt and down the drain. In order to keep a weak government afloat, more than 30 governments since World War II, European central banks came to the aid of Italy's flagging economy to the tune of $10.5 billion. Europe, of course, is not united. The European Economic Community is more of a customs or a tariffs union, where taxation and certain agreements with regard to the flow of goods back and forth across these borders have worked to a degree. But they have never been able to really arrive at solutions to some of the nagging problems on taxes and tariffs and certainly on a common agricultural policy. And especially Britain, of course, is quite worried about that and needs to support her own agriculture, as do the French and others. And as I said just the other day, there were Frenchmen, farmers, standing out blocking the roads in France in order to protest conditions there that meant a very low wage for farm products. So Europe is anything but united today. But I believe prophecy shows Europe is going to be united. Oh, I do not mean the present nine. For a matter of fact, for many, many years, I sincerely doubted whether Britain would ever become a member of the common market because I was assuming, like so many others, and even the very founding fathers of the idea, along with them Sir Winston Churchill, assumed that the EEC would be the foster child of the United States of Europe. I began to assume that the common market would literally be the baby that would emerge into a full-grown giant of a United States of Europe. What is more likely is that the weak economic union is going to fall apart, that country after country is going to simply drop out, that some new kind of configuration is going to come along to replace it, this time with far more a political and a military posture than simply a customs or a tariffs union, which is all that the EEC has been in the past. Well, let me tell you that the avalanche of trade goods pouring into the United States and around the world, undercutting American products, have led directly to some of the deep economic problems of the United States today. We were unable to compete abroad. We priced ourselves out of the same markets of our leading competitors, among them the leading European countries of the EEC, and consequently our balance of payments deficits became huge, enormous, and absolutely unspeakably large. There is no way to really describe the tremendous problem in the American economy resulting directly from our inability to compete with what has been so far only a shaky customs union. What will happen when these nations become powerful, completely united together politically? What kind of a threat will that eventually mean to the United States of America?
Since World War II, an economic power bloc with a population of 300 million people has been taking shape in Europe. With existing treaties, the European Economic Community has trade ties with 93 nations, with a corner on 43% of world export trade. Europe is fast becoming the supermarket of the free world. Staggering inflation rates and crippling oil shortages increase the potential for rapid changes in Europe. How will they affect you, your family, job, and future? Stay informed and stay ahead of world developments through the pages of the Plain Truth magazine, with monthly articles on Europe and other issues vital to you. Be sure to request the Plain Truth. Your free subscription will begin immediately if you call 800-423-4444. Toll free, 800-423-4444.
NATO in Brussels, Belgium, stands for North Atlantic Treaty Organization, and it's not entirely North Atlantic, nor is it very well organized these days. But to understand what has happened in post-World War II Europe, you have to understand what has happened in NATO. The North Atlantic Treaty Organization was born in about 1949, and of course about 20 years later, the member nations reaffirmed their commitment to its existence by signing a renewal, in a sense, of the treaty. And yet, when you look at what has happened since the close of World War II until today, and the unbelievable expenditure of monies that the United States has poured into the maintaining of American troops, nuclear warheads, about 50% of our nuclear capability is stockpiled somewhere in Europe, a lot of it in West Germany and elsewhere, you begin to wonder, has it really been worth it all? Well, for the Europeans, it has been. To the Europeans, it really meant that if some attack came, even if conventional, from the Soviet Union across from Eastern Europe into West Europe, say into West Germany or here into Belgium, that the United States would react instantly with a nuclear attack upon the Soviet Union. That thinking may have been wishful thinking even in 1949 or 1950, but today it is so totally out to date as to be completely ludicrous. In the first place, no American high in the Pentagon and all the way up to the White House itself would ever remotely consider the idea of an immediate American nuclear attack upon the Soviet Union without being willing to absorb an immediate Soviet retaliated attack. And that could mean, of course, the nightmare of nuclear bomb World War III and the virtual extermination in a matter of hours of up to one half of the American population. But today, NATO is not so well organized. As a matter of fact, if you noticed recently, two NATO members were virtually going at it down in the Turkish invasion of Cyprus. When the Turks invaded Cyprus, it looked for a time as if Turkey and Greece might literally go to war, one with the other. Troops were being rushed to both borders on the European-Turkish frontier, and it was only by a narrow margin that apparently the Greece government finally fell and a new civilian government came into charge. Thus, you find another government in Central Europe toppling in a matter of only a very few months. One nation after another has gone straight down the drain from one crisis or another. NATO right now seems to be going along with its deep problems, its frayed and tattered edges, but nevertheless is still intact. Frankly, it seems to be totally out of date and completely redundant. If you noticed in the newspapers recently, quite a large attack was launched against NATO in its present configuration when it was revealed that the weapons are rather strategically misplaced, out of date, poorly deployed, that most of the American forces are in southern Germany, when most people feel that if the Soviet Union should attack in Europe, it would come across northern Germany or even across into the United States over the Arctic or through the southern Mediterranean, witness the recent Middle Eastern blow-up. NATO seems to be beside the point and redundant. Depending upon your politics, the United States is spending even up to $17 billion a year. That's if you include all the forces it takes, even inside the United States, in order to maintain the NATO configuration. Or about $2.1 billion a year for direct costs spent right here in Europe to keep that kind of American military presence here. So, for the post-war years, more than 25 of them now, European governments have been able to build their economies, their industries, to export fantastic avalanche of trade goods into the United States, undercutting and outselling the United States, even in its own markets. All the while, the United States of America has been pouring billions upon billions of dollars to maintain NATO forces here. Well, here they are still, the member nations of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, with largely outdated and outmoded weapons, poorly deployed, at very great cost to the United States, those costs not shared by most of the other member countries who have been able instead to devote their energies to building up very powerful, post-war, viable economies. Europe of 1974 is a far different Europe from that of only a very few years ago, where the European Economic Community was seemingly riding along fairly well and headed toward potential full political union. as a direct result of the Arab oil embargo, the united action of Arab states to cut off the source of vital life's blood to Europe and the United States alike, and then the skyrocketing oil prices to more than quadruple of what they were, the incredible worsening balance of payments deficits experienced by many of these European governments, runaway domestic inflation at home, toppling governments, and of course the constant arms race, growing American and Soviet involvement in detente, has Europeans worried, nervous, apprehensive, and of course a little bit irritated over high prices, just like us in the United States. I do not believe now that a United States of Europe is going to emerge out of a European economic community. Rather, I believe we're going to see different fragmentation and disintegration than we have seen before between and among European partners. That means that NATO, in the near future, is going to collapse in some way. Whether certain member countries are simply going to decide that they'll pull their forces out, whether the United States decides that it is totally redundant and entirely too costly. But nevertheless, it is going to become a relic of the past. Maybe someday this building will become a museum for tourists to visit, just like that building in the central part of Brussels here in Belgium that is the headquarters for the European Economic Community. But Europe eventually is going to unite, not from a marriage of convenience, but a marriage of absolute necessity. I believe you're going to see it come out of deep economic sickness, growing trade war, total collapse of present-day governments, the emergence of extremist governments either on the left or the right, and more than likely, rightist governments coming along in some of these countries in order to combat the threat of leftist governments at that extreme. Europe of the next few years is going to be totally different than the one we have known for the past 25, that's for sure. And remember, we live in the kind of a world where faraway events, such as those in the Middle East and the action by the Arab oil states, do affect the rest of all of humankind. You can't write off 252 million people inside these countries in Europe who have their homes, their lives, their families, and their jobs at stake, and who are just as nervous and apprehensive over the trend of conditions today in the world as are many people inside the United States. A strong, powerful, nuclear-armed Europe is still in the offing in the years ahead. The only question is when and in what configuration will it come. When it does come, then the United States of America had better take warning, because it is just quite likely that that new Europe of the future could prove to be something less and the closest friend and ally the United States has ever had. From NATO headquarters in Brussels, Belgium, this is Garner Ted Armstrong.
All literature offered on the Garner Ted Armstrong program is free upon request. Write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Canadian viewers write Box 44, Vancouver, BC. In the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, call 213-577-5225. Be sure to watch Garner Ted Armstrong again next week at this same time.